we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello! And welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a correction from a Boston publication read by Neil Sleet.
In our latest newsletter, we reported that President Obama ordered the expulsion of Russian diplomats. This was an autocorrect of expulsion, and we apologise.
Our thanks to Bill Shribman for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Angela Barnes. And opposite them on my left, Andrew Maxwell and Susan Kalman. So, Andy, whose speech may have made things clearer?
Well, obviously, this is the latest instalment in the Brexit saga. I never like talking about Brexit on the radio in case listeners are operating heavy machinery. but something a little bit different happened this week in that Mrs. May abandoned her previous Brexit policy of telling everyone, just back off! All right? It's nobody's business but my own. She's abandoned that position and she's adopted a kind of more transparent, open position. And she made a speech that was generally well received. The speech was perceived as being thought through and very carefully worded and very sort of meticulously calibrated. So I can only assume that she forgot that Boris is Foreign Secretary. Because the following day, Boris... there's this art form called action painting, you know, where you get a bucket of brightly coloured paint and you chuck it at a wall to see if it forms exciting, pretty patterns. And that's pretty much Boris's approach to language. So using that technique, he semi-inadvertently compared President Hollande to a World War II prison guard. And to be fair to Boris, he was only obeying the first tenet of British foreign policy through the centuries, which is, if in doubt, attack the French. So anyway, I mean, I think the mood has changed on Brexit. That's the conclusion I reached this week. I think the public mood is now that Brexit is a little bit like a colonoscopy. You know you've got to have it done, you just want it over.
It's happening, so we do need to get on with it. It's like one night when I was, I did a couple of baby shams, I bought a fringed leather jacket. And it arrived, Miles, and it didn't suit me. It doesn't suit anyone. But I thought, I've paid for it, so I have to wear it. And I wore that jacket for a good couple of years, and it didn't matter how uncomfortable everyone else was at the funeral, but I just wore it.
The whole thing about leaving the single market, because I'm sure I remember back in November time, Jeremy Corbyn say that was the bottom line. And now it's happened. He's been remarkably quiet about it. He's like one of those parents, you know, when you threaten your kids, and you're like, I mean it, I'm going to count to three, and when I get to three, you're in really big trouble if I have to get to... And he's got to three, and he hasn't got a clue what to do.
What is the difference, then, between like a single market and having a free trade deal with someone? Is that not effectively the same thing?
No.
No. The enormous boring difference between the two, but I doubt if any of us have been brought here by the BBC to discuss trade differences.
Well, that's a terrible misbooking.
Yeah,
you certainly haven't, Andrew.
The one thing I like about Theresa May is I think she's really having a lot of fun with this. You can tell, you know, the speech, she would smile. You know, like Miranda used to look at the camera, you could see her going... She said, I'm sure I'm going to have a great relationship with the devolved institutions, and she just went because the ultimate trolling, of course, was doing the speech in a black watch tartan suit. I'm surprised she didn't come out with a See You Jimmy hat as well and a sign saying, come ahead Nicola, let's see what you've got, because when she walked out in that, I went, oh it is on.
It was a hell of a suit. She looked like a stray Bay City roller. They do, some of them get off the reservation. They have to be brought back in. They do it humanely.
It looked a bit like carpeting in a sort of downbeat hotel, I thought. But apparently, that's her lucky suit.
Yes, it's her lucky Vivian Westwood suit. And you're right, though, because I've just bought a house and I've got a carpet that looks exactly like that in the living room.
Mm. Is there a Theresa May shape cut out? That's mystery solved.
Spottily, these are the latest adventures of Prime Minister Theresa May, whose speech this week finally explained that Brexit means Brexit means Brexit means Brexit. Some said May's speech told us nothing we didn't already know, but if, like me, you know absolutely nothing, it was a revelation. Much like the Sherlock finale, the speech was long-awaited and many said they found it incomprehensible and meaningless. What will the transitional arrangements be? How will we set trade tariffs? How did Dr. Watson's wife make so many DVDs before she died and send them to me at exactly the right time? It just makes no sense. The Sun ran the headline Brexitus, referring to the book in the Bible where the Jews left Egypt to escape the infuriating red tape of an unelected Belgian pharaoh. 2 points to Andy. Angela, who swears they'll make America great again?
So... I can't put it any better than that, really, can I? I think as this programme is being aired, Donald Trump will have been inaugurated as the 45th president.
Fake news! Fake news! Fake news!
Now, at the time of recording, of course, the inauguration hasn't happened, so at the moment we can only talk about what may occur. Does anyone else feel like you're sort of on this roller coaster, going on the up bit, and you've just found out that roller coaster was decommissioned 20 years ago? He'll be sworn in on a Bible, a really tiny Bible, to make his hands look normal size. Trump's team have said that the list of performers at the inauguration ceremony will be diverse, by which I think they mean a country singer in a hat and a country singer without a hat and some Cossack dancers. I genuinely recognise more people in the Big Brother house at the moment than I do. I've been to Guildford Festival and it had more famous people on the lineup than... I've got to look here because I don't know the name, so I've written it down. There's Jackie Evancho, who is an America's Got Talent contestant who came second, which, so that makes perfect sense because Trump also didn't win a popular vote. What?
There's a huge lineup. There's a Bruce Springsteen cover band.
No, they refused.
They've pulled out, but there's still a huge, huge lineup. Ken Barlow. Ken Barlow, Wario, they couldn't get Mario. Bigfoot and the Hendersons. The Sexy Cranky.
It's a strange thing. Michael Flatley, disappointingly, and I am genuinely disappointed about this, is apparently playing his inauguration ball. And I'm disappointed because his Feet of Flames has got me through some difficult times, Miles.
To see a man of that middle-aged spread squeezed into leather.
I find it strangely attractive, though, because his legs are very... He's tied in to his trousers.
Oh, he is.
And
Have you ever gone to Ireland and seen black pudding in a butcher's?
Yeah.
It's black pudding on legs.
Yeah. And I find I'm slightly disappointed he said yes, because I had a lot of respect for Michael Flatley, the Lord of the Dance.
Did you imagine the two of you were sort of more politically in sync, you and Michael Flatley?
Well, can I make a personal plea to the producers of the Today programme not to broadcast Michael Gove discussing Donald Trump at a time when people may be eating? Because I very nearly lost my breakfast. But I did listen to Gove's analysis from the toilet with the door open, just in case. Basically, what he said was that we shouldn't panic, we shouldn't jump the gun, you know, and that eventually it was just down to all of us to form a judgment about Donald Trump based on the things he says and the things he does. And I thought, I've already done that. I mean, I did that quite a long time ago.
The real danger is that Vladimir Putin might die of optimism and happiness, which are two genuinely potentially fatal things for a Russian. The worst part of it is now, with Trump there, we're going to have a lot more Piers Morgan on our TV. Oh, he's all Trumpy now. He was right-wing when he was at the News of the World, and then he was left-wing when he was at the Mirror, and then he went to America, and then he was against guns when he was at CNN, and now he's up Trump's booty. He's just the worst. God, Piers Morgan. He should be just on a list on a fridge door because he is such a chore.
Personally, I think this evening has already been worth it for the phrase, up Trump's booty.
Yeah.
Prognathus Lee, this is the news of Donald Trump's inauguration as 45th President of the United States. The world has been waiting to hear Trump's inauguration speech, and seeing as he can't be sued for things he says as president, at last the shackles are off and he can start telling it how it is. Hillary Clinton will attend the inauguration, which I was initially surprised by, but you only get so many chances in your life to see DJ Ravi Drums and Toby Keith on the same bill. As he moves in, living in the White House will be problematic for Donald, given what he traditionally does when he comes across beds that the Obamas have slept in. Also this week, Trump gave his first British interview to backstabbing blast from the past Michael Gove. In the interview, Trump suggested he would close a quick trade deal between the UK and the US, one in which we provide him with all our remaining raw materials, while in return we get a dozen steaks and the luxurious Make America Great Again mouse mat. 2 points to Angela. Andrew, which assembly has been disassembled?
The Northern Ireland Assembly has been dissolved. They're going to have an election pretty soon. And it was all originally from a thing called the Cash for Ash scandal. It was meant to be a green initiative to make small businesses and the like be more environmentally efficient. But then people saw that there was a way around it. And if you actually burnt more fuel, you get more money. And they think it could run up to about $500 million taxpayers' money will have been literally gone up in smoke. And now there's going to be an election. So I'm sure the people there will set aside their 300 years of civil strife and really focus on the major issues. No! It'll be like every other election in Northern Ireland history. It'll just be a sectarian headcount of orange and green. Because, by God, they love sectarianism. Have you ever done it yourself, Miles?
Sectarianism?
Oh! It's a lot of effort, but once you get into it, it's fantastic.
I mean, is it a costume-based, or...?
It can be.
Yeah.
The most famous sectarian thing outside Northern Ireland is there's two football teams in Glasgow. There's Celtic and they're Catholic, and there's Rangers and they're Protestant, and they hate each other, right? And this is actually... It's in America now as well. The Rangers-Celtic thing's huge in America. It's massive. There's Boston Celtic and New York Rangers, but they rarely play each other because one of them's a basketball team and the other one's an ice hockey team.
But do the fans still have the fights anyway? Oh.
Some say it's too slippy, some say it's too bouncy. That's religion for you.
Yeah.
Susan, are you as optimistic as Andrew?
Well, I mean, there's at least... This election is one even Putin's going to say, now I'll stay out of this one. I mean, for me, the main thing is it's going to bring up all the issues which they haven't solved, the main one being, for me, the fact they still not manage equality in Northern Ireland. And it would be champion if someone would sort that out, being the only part of the United Kingdom where there isn't equality for gay people.
The DUP still very much have that attitude that gay marriage devalues the sanctity of marriage. It's an attitude I can't get my head around because... You know, it's two people who love each other declaring that love in front of them. I don't understand how that devalues anything. What I'd like to do is I'd like to take the DUP to a rough comedy club that I play on a Saturday night and I'll show them what devalues marriage, and that is Hindus.
I don't know if you've ever read the good book, Miles, but there's only one reference to man-on-man action in the good book, and that's in the book of Leviticus in the Old Testament. One reference in Leviticus and 28 references to not eating shellfish. Mm. So just give you a perspective on it.
Which one creates the most moral panic? I would say scallops.
Yeah.
Oh, never trust a bivalve.
I've been to Belfast once, and when I was there, it felt like a town where things were on the up. But then I went on the open-top bus tour.
That bus you're talking about, 2 million people. It's one of the biggest tourist attractions in Northern Ireland. 2 million people get on that open-top bus, and you go up the Catholic Falls Road, you go through the Peace Wall, and you come down the Shankill Loyalist Protestant Road. And you see all the murals, and you never get off the bus. Just, how distasteful is that? It's just a sectarian safari.
Yeah. You're right, yeah.
Facetiously, these are the latest goings-on in Northern Ireland, where fresh Assembly elections will be held on the 2nd of March. If the two main parties can't agree a power-sharing agreement, there could be yet another election. It will continue forever and ever, with the whole country becoming little more than a hostile vacuum held together by a series of public votes, not unlike ITV. Hot topics in the forthcoming elections are likely to include Brexit, the Irish language and gay marriage. The DUP don't agree with gay marriage, whereas Sinn Féin believe that marriage can be between a man and a woman, a man and a man, or a woman and a woman. It really doesn't matter as long as they're both Catholic. The DUP remains staunchly opposed to same-sex marriage. A spokesperson said the party supports the traditional definition of marriage, one man and one woman, mutually despising each other's every grating, wheezy breath, sickening odour and mind-numbing utterance until their long-awaited dying day. Do have a lovely weekend. There's also uncertainty about what Donald Trump's presidency will mean for Northern Ireland, given that usually when he sees someone strutting around in a sash, he follows them to their dressing room and watches them change. I ought to say, I did get some criticism last week for apparently not knowing who First Minister Arlene Foster was. I can only apologise to Arlene, who I'm actually a big fan of, not least for the 20 glorious years she spent married to Boycie in Only Fools and Horses. Arlene! 2 points to Andrew. Susan, which high rollers have got out of trouble?
Well, it's important, I think, sometimes to remember that while we're all having a lovely time enjoying the carnival of uncertainty that is Brexit, that there are other stories happening in the world, and this is one of them. The story concerns Rolls-Royce, which is the engineering firm, not the upmarket BAP shop in Morningside. And there's a thing called deferred prosecution agreement that enables firms to avoid prosecution if they freely confess to economic crimes like fraud or bribery. So the serious fraud office, not to be confused with the frivolous fraud office that deals with people who die their hair and don't admit it, found a conspiracy to corrupt or failure to prevent bribery by Rolls-Royce in China and India and lots of other markets. Now, Rolls-Royce are going to pay £671 million in penalties, but the firm won't be prosecuted themselves because they admitted what they did, you know. So, for example, they gave away cars, Rolls-Royces, to get contracts. I'm a bit miffed, actually, because in all my years of doing Radio 4 panel shows and local arts centres, I've never been offered a car. I got a fruit platter in Lowestoft, but that's all I've had. So, actually, Rolls-Royce's fine was halved because they admitted it. And their share price has gone up.
So the government has set up a scheme whereby big organisations can pay the government to avoid prosecution. Right, now, I'm no expert, yep, but that sounds like, I don't know, bribery? Yeah.
It's a thing that's not available to the average person to say, you know, I stole some condiments from the Premier and I'm sorry. That's literally what I'm saying to you all. I stole some condiments. They don't chain down the ketchup.
To be fair to Rolls-Royce, apart from the £671 million, they also did have to issue an apology. And when that's not an easy car to find in Hallmark. You know, a big also sort of kitten's face with the words, sorry we bribed so many of your officials. As you say, it does feel, it is effectively bribing your way out of a charge of bribery.
And their share price uplift will essentially pay for the £671 million.
I mean, this is a great success story we're talking about, isn't it?
You know, if you're selling things to lots of parts of the world, bakshish is the way it is. You've got to pay and pay. It's only here where we have a formalised system of bribery and corruption known as the class system that it seems distasteful and gauche to actually pay.
They're just keeping it real, aren't they? They're just,
I mean, this is, what do you want?
Well, they're making
engines that go in. Yeah, it is illegal.
I don't want to be the one on the panel that's like all up in your grill about the legality of bribery. But it's kind of, you know,
they've admitted they were wrong. Let's get back to the main business of selling aviation equipment that gets stuck onto fighter jets. You know, this is the whole point. Britain is a great trading nation. Yeah. And this is what it trades, corruption and arms. Great tradition. You know.
Rigidly, this is the news that Rolls-Royce have agreed a cash settlement with the Serious Fraud Office to avoid facing charges of corruption and bribery. The deal is worth £671 million, making it very much the Rolls-Royce of bribery settlements. The emblem of Rolls-Royce is the spirit of ecstasy, a lady with her arms gracefully stretched out behind her, or, as they say at Rolls-Royce, a classic double backhander. A spokesman for Rolls-Royce told the press, past practices do not reflect the way Rolls-Royce does business today, adding, I'll just leave this here. 2 points to Susan, and at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Angela have 4, but Andrew and Susan have 5. We start round two with an extract from a Guardian article.
Dr. David Davis sees more than his fair share of 60-somethings. His clinic is situated in the West Somerset village of Dunster, which has one of the densest populations of older people in Britain.
Thanks to John and Helen Bardsley in Manchester for sending us that. Andy, have a listen to this. I'm going to be round my vegetables. I'm going to chop down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favourite vegetable. Well, that was absolutely the stuff of nightmares. Andy, why can't you Getty your courgette?
This is about courgettes. Apparently there is an acute shortage of courgettes because of the weather in Spain. The rain in Spain has been staying mainly on the plane and not on the courgettes. And so there is this shortage of courgettes. And according to the paper I read, there are 3 cities in the UK where you can't currently get courgettes, but they're not revealing what the 3 cities are because I imagine they're scared of riots. You know, vegetarians marching on the Houses of Parliament, if they can summon up the energy. And so anyway, it's apparently a crisis for courgette lovers.
Yeah.
Now, I've been racking my brains, and I think courgettes started in the 1980s when Mr. Courgette invented the courgette because he felt there weren't enough watery vegetables that didn't taste of anything. And then, you know, they sort of caught on. After that, people quite liked that they were sort of like the bastard child of a cucumber and a marrow. I think they might be related.
But they are definitely related.
They are baby marrows, aren't they?
I think a courgette is like a winter cucumber.
Right.
Mm. But I don't care for them at all. Like, no. Any cucumber you've got to cook can piss off. Yeah.
I have difficulty because I think courgette, whenever I say courgette, it sounds more and more sexy the more you say it. I don't know if you've noticed, Miles.
Oh, courgette. I noticed.
Is that because it's a small courge?
And when you say, do you want a courgette, the more you say it, the more it sounds kind of flirtatious.
What shall we do this evening, darling? Shall we, well, I suppose the children sound like they're asleep. Perhaps we could have a courgette.
And once you get that into your head, when you go to the supermarket, if you go to the supermarket and you say, have you got any courgettes? It feels like you're flirting with someone in Morrison's and it cheers up the whole trip.
Part of the problem is the courgette fad, isn't it? That everyone's eating courgette, which is basically shredding a courgette as a substitute for spaghetti.
You spiralise it. You've got these spiralisers.
Julienne peeler or spiralise it, and it's used as... I once tried to buy a courgette at my local supermarket and all they had were ready-made bags of courgette. I'd spent 3 hours sticking it back together.
I thought we had a spiralizer at home, but £2 of green Play-Doh later, the truth finally dawned on me.
I'll tell you what I had for the first time this Christmas. Had my first Brussels sprout.
No.
Oh, first Brussels sprout.
I'd never had a
few.
I just
lack of curiosity or manners.
No. It turns out it's just a really uptight cabbage.
Yes.
And if you wrap bacon around it, it's fine. Yes.
The main point of this story is that whilst we're awaiting a global thermonuclear war, there's not enough courgettes.
Well, it's not just, courgettes. Lettuce, spinach, celery, peppers, broccoli, tomatoes, cucumbers. I mean, it's a complete crudité crisis.
And the other thing is...
is there a way back from this, do you think, Andy?
From this item?
From this... No, long gone. Right. Diaphanously, this is the news of a courgette shortage that has hit the UK, caused by poor weather in southern Europe. They say that the courgette shortage will hit clean eaters hardest, but I think we can all agree, probably not hard enough. With courgettes becoming such a high-value item, it surely won't be long before people start smuggling them into the country internally. So if you are buying off the black market, do make sure to wash them first.
That's a great idea for a gritty Channel 4 series. You know, a young woman who gets caught up in the world of crime and becomes a courgette mule.
How would she... Oh,
no!
Cold temperatures in Italy have meant poor harvests of courgettes and broccoli, as well as the sad postponement of Dolmio Day. So if you've already put up your Dolmio tree, don't sprinkle the cheese on it just yet. As a result of the vegetable shortage, we'll now have to rely on things we can dig out of the ground ourselves, like turnips, onions, unexploded World War II landmines and sausages. 2 points to Andy. Angela, who's telling cyclists to get on their bike?
OK, so this is MP for Stoke-on-Trent, I believe, Rob Flello, and he has said that cyclists are making pollution and congestion in the UK cities... Now, I'm no scientist, but I'm pretty sure that being in a car is worse than being on a bike. I mean, depending on what you've had for dinner the night before.
In terms of emissions.
In terms of emissions. Now, I am a cyclist. I mean, I've got a bike. My boyfriend is a keen cyclist. He cycles... I mean, he doesn't wear lycra. He's not a prick, but he's got a bike. I've got a bike. I bought a bike when I moved to London because I thought it'd help me get around town, you know, quicker than London transport. It hasn't really worked out because I've got no sense of direction and you can't read a map on a bike. I've ended up just following the bus I would have been on. But one of the things that Rob Flello has said, he's described himself as a cycle lane sceptic, which is weird because I've seen them and they're definitely there. yeah. I don't know. His problem is he feels that cycle lanes take up so much tarmac that they're taking tarmac away from vehicles and causing congestion. Now, I don't know how wide the cycle lanes are in Stoke-on-Trent, but I know in London, you know, I feel I'm going over the line if I wear a jacket with shoulder pads.
I don't know how far he wants to take this in terms of saying, oh, that, you know, perhaps he thinks that we should maybe not have pavements. If more people drove, then presumably less of the airspace would be taken up by people walking. Perhaps once you get in a car, it's more environmental. The car is moving at speed. Cars idling cause worse emission damage. So perhaps once you're in a car, that is it.
You're
only allowed to stop for petrol, basically. Otherwise, you've just got to keep going.
He's in Stoke-on-Trent. He's probably worried that UKIP are breathing down his neck and they don't want to look like they're out of touch. By cycling or eating vegetables or reading.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on this, Susan?
Well, I mean, I like cyclists. I've met many nice ones. I tried to cycle myself for health reasons and I went to a cycle shop. Haven't cycled in many years. I'm generally frightened by things like that, but I thought, oh, no, go, Susan, you know... Be brave. And I went into the shop and I said, can I have a bike? And they said, yes. And I tried on lots of bikes. Didn't try them on because that would be silly, but I got on quite a lot of bikes. And the only one that fitted me, and this is absolutely true, was a Peppa Pig children's bike. And I refuse to ride a children's bike. I am a 42-year-old woman. And the woman said, oh, it doesn't look so bad. You could just cover up the Peppa Pig stickers. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And she said, oh, you can take the basket off the front. And I said, I want an adult bike. And she said, we don't do bikes for adults as small as you are. And so it was the Peppa Pig bike or no bike, so I just get taxis.
You could have just left the bike as it is and always dressed as a child.
That would be faintly sinister. Would it not be faintly sinister if I was riding
around...
It's
an important part of the Scottish showbiz tradition.
Just wearing shorts, yeah. Kind of riding around Glasgow. No, I mean, they're fine. It's a real problem for me, though. I like cyclists and cycling, but even, like, I go to the gym and people do spin classes and I can't do spin because I can't... My feet don't reach the pedals.
Is there not
bikes.
Some arrangement, like, if you wore sort of wedges or something like that? Or
it's not
like
particularly...
Like, Brussels creepers, would they make your life easier?
I don't think it's particularly safe to wear kind of platform shoes on bicycles. I mean, it's something...
I think it's all right if it's a bicycle that's self-supporting. I wouldn't feel safe stopping at lights in them.
But the point is, I don't want to drive a Peppa Pig bike, Miles. I don't think it doesn't fit in with the image that people have of me as a sophisticated lady.
What's your thing? So more in the night garden or something? What's your...
Peppa Pig's a cheerful, positive. She's great.
Look, I mean, I like Peppa Pig. I'm not saying I don't like Peppa Pig.
What have you got against Peppa Pig, Susan?
I'm not that Peppa Pig is a really
I think this is some
series.
Sort of sinister coded message.
But I think as a sophisticated lady who's on Radio 4 and who enjoys beetroot, I should be on, like, one of those
Remand.
Nice big bike. It's one of those old-fashioned bikes because I've got a tweed cape that I bought myself because I thought that fitted in with me. So I've got... Shut up! I've got a tweed... Because ultimately I want to look like Margaret Rutherford. That's the dream. And I wanted to...
Crime-solving spinster.
I want to look like a lesbian time traveller. So I wanted one of those old-fashioned bikes so I could drive around with my tweed cape. But I can't look like that on a Peppa Pig bike. It looks like I've stolen a child's bike.
But if you're prepared to splash out on the costume, surely you'd be prepared to splash out on a paint job. It'd be fine, wouldn't it?
Was Peppa Pig the only option? Did they not have
a little
Batman?
Yes, it was the only option. It wasn't the only option, but they wouldn't let me get the BMX. There was a BMX as well that I could have got, but that was like some form of Action Man one, and for some reason I didn't think that would fit in either, and the Peppa Pig one just... Oh.
Have you got a Peppa Pig bike, Andy? You sound pretty keen on them as a...
No, I'm keen because I'm in it. I'm in Peppa Pig. I am the voice of Dr. Elephant, the dentist. I've recorded quite a few episodes now. Dr. Elephant, he is a dentist and he is an elephant.
But is he a doctor, though?
He's got a certificate, I'm sure. He's called Dr. I've never actually done a scene as an elephant dentist where I extract teeth. I think that would be a bit difficult and a bit... I've been told by dentists that it actually helped children relax when they went to the dentist, but I can't see how that would work, because surely the child is expecting the dentist to be an elephant. So they're going to be more alarmed that the dentist is non-elephantine than... But also, I don't know how it would work with the drills. I mean, they're very prehensile trunks. They're very skillful with their trunks, so I presume it would be a drill in a trunk and a screaming child. But I've never actually...
Does the elephant dentist have an assistant in Peppa Pig?
You're listening to the news quiz. Food for thought. Romantically, this is the behaviour of Labour MP Rob, for he's a jolly good Flello, who claims that cyclists cause congestion. For those of you not familiar with Mr. Flello, he was pictured this week wearing a mustard blazer and bouffant hair, a look that experienced fashionistas describe as hard Brexit. You can spot a cycle lane by looking for blue markings on the tarmac, signage by the side of the road, or the sight of Rob Flello gleefully driving down it with a snowplough strapped to the front of his Mondeo. It's quite right, of course. Last summer I drove across France in a series of 21 daily stages, and you would not believe how many bikes there were clogging up the road. 2 points to Angela. Susan, what has arrived by express from the Orient?
Oh, yes, as I'm the News Quiz's transportation correspondent this week, allow me to answer. This is the first ever, hold on to your hats, direct train from China to Barking. Truly the new Orient Express route we've all been waiting for. It took 18 days to complete the journey from China to Barking, which is impressive because you could nearly get to Brighton in that time. And it passed through Kazakhstan and Russia and Poland and Germany and Belarus and was probably held up outside Peterborough, and there was a replacement bus service, knowing my luck. And what it had on it was lots of containers of goods from China. This is the start of trying to reopen the Silk Road to transport goods from China to Barking. And the people of Barking apparently were very, very happy. They had a large ceremony, which involved two women with some party poppers, as it arrived. It's not quite caught on yet. And the train was called the East Wind, after the quote, "The East Wind will prevail over the West Wind," which was one of Mao's quotes, which sounds... It's nice, but it's also... It's kind of charming, but threatening at the same time, kind of like myself. And it's hopefully... Is that your wallet? It's the kind of thing... It's hopefully, in the post-Brexit environment where we're all concerned about things, don't worry, because there's a train that's going from China to Barking. So if the banking sector could just calm down, it's all right, because once a month, a train's coming from China with some soft toys and Christmas decorations, because where it's coming from is the world's leading supplier of Christmas decorations. We're all fine next December in the nuclear wasteland that is the United Kingdom. So, cheery news. China to Barking, 18 days. Let's all get on that and get some courgettes.
What I love most about this story is it's really exciting. It's 18 days, this train to come from China to Barking, but they did have to change the locomotive and wagon in each country because the different gauge on the rail. So is that the same train or is that Trigger's broom?
The key, really, as Virgin Trains will tell you, is if you have a ticket from London to Glasgow, it doesn't really matter how they get you there. If they get you there in the end, it's the same journey, whether it's 17 different buses and you have to walk from Oxenholme to Carlisle. That was a laugh.
It's the same containers, though, isn't it? They're keeping the same containers. The box is the same when they move it. Perhaps even the driver's the same.
A very tired driver.
One of the best days of my life, I was getting the train somewhere, right, and it was really busy, and I had a suitcase with me, and I had to get somewhere, and I was, like, really upset because I had to get somewhere, and the driver saw me, and he said, do you want to come in my cabin? Which is not sinister at all. And I got to sit up with the driver and stuff. And up to, oh. I love trains, Miles. I've got a model railway. I'm trying to get a train that you can sit on that goes around the garden. Because...
But it's a normal model railway.
The reason they're doing it, though, is because train travel is the most economic and greenest way of transporting goods. And in all seriousness, they're hoping that this will create the economy that we're going to lose out on when Europe shuts its doors to us, as they may well do, because Theresa May hasn't convinced them to let us trade within them. So China is the answer. Even though that train has to come through Europe to get to us, I'm sure they'll let the train through, won't they? Yeah.
What are we going to send them back? Do we put stuff on the train and send it back?
Whiskey.
Whiskey?
Whiskey is the number one export from the UK to China.
China.
It's the only thing they want from us.
Whiskey?
Well, they can make everything else.
What else do
they
we make?
They can't make whiskey.
What else
Jam?
Do we make?
Rolls Royce. That'll cost you.
What else do we make that would be good to send to China? What else do
weapons?
We make?
TV formats.
TV formats. Formats.
The second highest watched TV show in the world is the Chinese version of Take Me Out.
No.
Yep. Oh,
Scones?
But you don't need to put it's that called, on a train.
Oh, God. It's called, the Chinese version of it is called If Not Sincere, Do Not Disturb.
Now, over the course of this evening, sometimes I find it very hard, Andrew, to tell when you're telling the truth.
That's a different panel show on Radio 4. Yeah.
Have you ever travelled from China to England over perhaps 18 days, Andrew, and indeed enjoyed it?
I did some of the way, but then I had to be brought out by helicopter. Can't tell you.
No.
I was actually genuinely, I was invited once to go heliboarding in Afghanistan with the SAS, but I had to say no.
Because of your past, or why?
Because I'm Irish. Kind of clash of situations. I met the SAS came up to me after a gig in the Alps and invited me to go heliboarding with them.
Miles, like none having... of us know.
So this is like having David Icon. Yeah. I mean,
so they came up to you after a gig and they said, hello, we're the SAS.
No, they came up to me after a gig, we're at altitude, and they went, myself and my colleagues, so obviously I'm straight away, these are the Brits. myself and my colleagues, we didn't know the comedy festival was on here. We came here to get away from our work for a week. We've gone to all the comedy shows. We've very enjoyed our time here. One of your colleagues was on stage the other night.
Is he Dutch?
Yes, your colleague said that you had been heliboarding in Afghanistan. We would like to invite you and your colleague to come heliboarding with us in Afghanistan. And I said, that's amazing. I'd love to, but I can't go heliboarding with you because I'm Irish and you are... And in a kind of sheepish way, he looked at his shoes and went, special forces? And so you could see why me being an Irish comedian couldn't be seen going on holidays with the...
So it was a holiday they were inviting you on. They invited you on a holiday to Afghanistan going heliboarding.
That's right.
And the reason you couldn't go is because you're Irish.
That's right.
That makes perfect sense to me, absolutely.
Doesn't make as much sense as being a time-travelling lesbian on a kid's bicycle.
That means...
Verbally, this is the triumphant arrival of a freight train that has made an 18-day journey. Who remembers the train? That went off more off topping than the cycling one. Verbally, this is the triumphant arrival of a freight train that's made an 18-day journey from Jiwu in China to Barking in the UK. The train is called the East Wind, which is short for The East wind shall prevail over the west, which does sound a bit sinister, but then The Flying Scotsman is actually short for The Flying Scotsman is coming for your children. The train consists of 34 wagons containing £4 million worth of goods and one chap in a Newcastle United shirt who's come down for the big game and has been in the bar since Shanghai. Upon arrival, the first container was ceremoniously opened to reveal tons of socks, tights and a dangerously dehydrated Michael Portillo. Wild-eyed and ranting incoherently about how the desert gets into your mind. 2 points to Susan. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Andy?
Well, this was seen in Warwick Hospital, sent in by Graham Parsons. It says... Warning, every Tuesday there is a practice fire alarm. Please remain calm, there is no need to panic. Unless told otherwise.
Andrew.
This is a job description spotted on Twitter by somebody going by the name of Mac Cocktail. We are a new charity called Fight Against Slavery, and we are advertising for an unpaid internship.
Susan.
Lots of people sent this one, and it's from an article called Is It OK to Watch Porn in Public? From the BBC website. Buses don't have flight attendants, though, nor do trains, and even if police wanted to investigate incidents of porn watching on public transport, passengers can get off whenever they like.
Thank you. Now let's take a look at the final score. Andrew and Susan have 9, but this week's winners with 10 are Andy and Angela. Before we leave you, here is an eyewitness account to a road accident seen on the local police Facebook page by Ray in Kingston.
I was walking my dog at the time and I saw the whole thing. The Audi driver thought he would cut back to avoid hitting the traffic island, but he ended up on the wrong side of the road and hit the liquid nitrogen container head on. I literally froze.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Angela Barnes, Andrew Maxwell and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Neil Sleeves. The chair's script was written by Madeline Brettingham, James Kettle and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Laura Major and Jenny LaVille. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.